It is Monday, October 23rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Coming up, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson urges calm between Qatar and its Gulf neighbors. Tensions spike up between the U.S. and Turkey, and high school students experience what it's like to have a professional job.
I had taken her downstairs to work with the snakes, and we have a resident tortoise, so she got some animal husbandry.
It's all ahead, live from Washington. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is expressing concerns about protracted tensions between Qatar and its neighbors. The top U.S. diplomat is in Doha to discuss joint counterterrorism efforts. He arrived late Sunday after a stop in Saudi Arabia, where he urged cooperation between the kingdom and its neighbor Iraq after decades of tensions. VOA's Zlatica Hoc has this report.
At a press conference in Doha, Tillerson urged Qatar and its Gulf neighbors to reconcile their differences. He said the United States is ready to help facilitate the diplomatic efforts, but will not impose answers.
As the Gulf dispute does near its five-month mark, the United States remains concerned, as concerned today as we were at the outset. The dispute has had negative consequences economically and militarily for those involved. And certainly the United States has felt the effects of that as well.
Qatar has been accused by Gulf states and Egypt of harboring Iran-backed militants, which both Doha and Tehran deny. Iran has backed militias fighting Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, but it has also financed terrorist group Hamas and helped arm rebels in Yemen. Iraq and Saudi Arabia on Sunday inaugurated a joint body to coordinate counter-terrorism activities. Tillerson attended the event in Riyadh.
Certainly, Iranian militias that are in Iraq, now that the fight against Daesh and ISIS is coming to a close, those militias need to go home. Any foreign fighters in Iraq need to go home and allow the Iraqi people to regain control of areas that had been overtaken by ISIS and Daesh that have now been liberated, allow the Iraqi people to rebuild their lives with the help of their neighbors.
The cooperation comes after decades of tensions between Iraq and Saudi Arabia and includes economic cooperation for the rebuilding of Iraq. The Saudi Minister of Foreign Affairs said the two countries are seeking to make up for the ground lost during decades of tensions.
The natural tendency of the two countries and people to be very close to each other, as they have been for centuries.
Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi echoed that sentiment. Iraq is struggling to establish unity after regaining most of its territory that was captured by Islamic State 3 years ago. But Kurds, who have been pivotal in that battle, declared independence from Baghdad last month, sparking new tensions in northern Iraq. The United States says Iran's involvement in Iraq, Syria, Yemen, and other regional conflicts is destabilizing the region. Zlatica Hoc, VOA News, Washington.
Acid attacks are an all-too-common problem in Pakistan, as in many other countries in South and East Asia. But almost all Pakistani victims are women. VOA's Saman Khan recently visited a center that not only helps a victim recover physically, but also helps them rebuild their lives.
My husband did this. After I was divorced, I was taking my kids to school. He came from behind and threw acid on me.
Victims often are left so scarred that society rejects them, adding to their pain.
I was in such a bad shape. I was even scared of myself. When I looked into the mirror, I was terrified. Some people even started joking about it. When I would go somewhere, people would say, "She must have been at fault. She must have done something wrong."
Here at the Smile Foundation, attack victims rebuild their lives.
All my surgeries have been done through Ms. Musarat. I have gone through 6 surgeries so far.
The Smile Foundation has helped nearly 800 victims since opening in 2003. Chairwoman Musarat Misbah says some were as young as 3.
On average, a girl has to go through 35 to 40 surgeries before she can begin to look a little better, but they never get their old face back.
After the surgeries are done, the foundation helps the women learn skills so they can earn a living. Another group, the Aurat Foundation, is working to stop acid attacks. It wants to get laws restricting acid sales fully enforced.
The law on acid throwing stipulated that acid sellers would be required to get a license. They have to get that license renewed. But this has never been implemented. It's necessary that the acid bottles priced at 10 to 15 rupees be banned.
Victims also say that the punishment for acid attacks is too lenient.
Those who commit this crime get 14 years in prison. However, they get out after 7 years and live the life they wanted. However, we remain here. We want them to also go through the same ordeal as us, so they can realize how the situation is faced.
For Saman Khan of VOA's Urdu service in Lahore, I am Sahar Majid, VOA News.
Well, joining me here in studio is VOA's social media editor, Andrew Palcheski. He keeps an eye on all things social media out there. Andrew, what kinds of things are you seeing tonight?
Well, Doug, one thing that is constant in social media is that it is always evolving. And Facebook tends to evolve quicker and more frequently than other social networks, particularly the Facebook news feed. They are constantly updating what you see in the news feed, what you don't see in the news feed, and what posts are showing up there. So Facebook is making another big change. At least they're testing one in six different countries, including Slovakia, Serbia, and Sri Lanka. I'm thinking maybe there's an S theme in these six countries they picked. But basically, this new newsfeed system would only show content from your friends and family and content that is from promoted accounts, not organic content from pages. Now, this sounds like a good idea. In fact, Facebook said in a statement that they always hear from people, that they want to hear more from their friends and family and see more posts from their friends and family. So they're creating two separate feeds, one with a dedicated space for friends and family and another dedicated for pages. Sounds good, right?
Well, I suppose ostensibly, but I can also see how this really kind of undercuts the whole basic idea of what Facebook is apparently supposed to be all about.
Exactly. And that's where the problem lies, because a lot of pages that aren't promoting, for example, news organizations or maybe community organizations, are not having their posts show up. In fact, one journalist said that his posts went down 75% in terms of their reach that they had before this was tested. So that's the issue, is that potentially news organizations won't get their content out there, other groups won't get their content out there, and it really will limit what people use Facebook for.
Right, and like we've seen over countless iterations, every time Facebook makes a change, people just immediately go to, I hate this.
So. Yes, it's, and not just Facebook, across the board. Twitter's made changes, Instagram, which is owned by Facebook, Snapchat. Anytime there's been a change, people don't like change. They like what they know.
Yeah, exactly.
But if we're following that model, people will be unhappy about this, but eventually they'll get over it and they'll accept it.
Anything else buzzing out there?
Yes. A secret Twitter account for one of the most well-known people in the news here in the U.S. Earlier this year, a reporter found what they believe to be a secret Twitter account for then-FBI Director James Comey. And it's a pretty interesting story how they found this. They did some sleuthing and cross-referenced an Instagram account with the Twitter account and found who they were following. It turns out that the secret Twitter account was following a college where James Comey's son attended. And the name of this account was Reinhold Niebuhr, which is a religious theologian that James Comey happened to write his thesis about when he was in college.
Many years up at Harvard. Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely.
So they have found the secret Twitter account. This was back in March. Well, we finally confirmed that it is indeed former FBI Director James Comey's secret Twitter account. He posted a picture of himself along a roadside in the U.S. state of Iowa, and he wrote, "On the road home, got to get back to writing. We'll try to tweet in useful ways." So with that, the mystery comes to an end. Apparently, it is James Comey's secret Twitter account. There was a lot of buzz about this when it was discovered back in March, why the FBI director had a secret Twitter account. It's something that high-profile folks usually have so they can monitor tweets and connect with family and friends without being on their main Twitter account. But this has gripped social media for a few months, and now the mystery comes to an end.
Well, I just love the fact that the man who you would think would be the one guy who could keep secrets wasn't able to keep this secret.
You know, it's amazing the internet sleuthing that goes on and the ability for people to track digitally. Now, this is not the first time this has happened. The National Football League commissioner's wife had a secret Twitter account where she was defending him against all these hate from fans and criticism from reporters. She got caught red-handed with that and had to issue an apology. But I am always fascinated and amazed with the amount of digital detective work that goes on and how people can find these things. And it just goes to show, even if you think it's hidden and private on social media, somebody always finds it.
I'm going to have to search for your secret Twitter account.
Unfortunately, I don't have one. All my tweets are public, so I don't have anything to hide, and you can mark my words on that.
Andrew Palcheski, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Doug.
Andrew Palcheski is VOA's social media editor. Here are some of the top stories that are trending at this hour. Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta says Kenya's elections, scheduled for October 26th, must go on. Iran and Syria make plans for closer military cooperation. The IS group assassinates 128 civilians before leaving a strategic town in central Syria. And the White House says President Trump's Asia trip, coming in early in November, aims to keep the world from plunging into a, quote, darker era. Expanded coverage on these stories and more at voanews.com. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists theorize that soon after the Big Bang, the universe became a very dark place because of all the thick gas generated by this kick-starting process. The gas was said to be so abundant that any existing light had become trapped. The universe began to light up about a billion years later as it expanded, became more transparent, and filled with celestial objects like galaxies, planets, and stars. Scientists have been puzzled over just how the universe was able to pull itself out of these cosmic dark ages. But scientists at the University of Iowa have presented a new theory on how it happened. They found evidence that the huge black holes found in the center of galaxies began to throw out matter so viciously that the outpouring of material was able to push through the surrounding gas, finally allowing the light to escape. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition, coming to you live on the Voice of America. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Coming up, summertime doesn't always mean vacation for all students. First, U.S. and Turkish diplomats continue talks on resolving a dispute over recent visa curbs as Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan steps up his rhetoric against Washington. Bilateral relations are set to be further strained by an upcoming court case over Iranian sanction busting involving Turkish citizens. Dorian Jones has more on this report from Istanbul.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan launched a scathing attack on Sunday on Turkey's Western allies. Erdogan warned Turkey would respect its strategic alliances with its partners as long as those countries respected the law. Ankara has accused some of its NATO partners of conspiring against it and offering sanctuary to people it accuses of being involved in last year's coup. Erdogan specifically targeted Washington.
Acaba birileri izin verir mi? Artık yok, geçti o işler.
He said, they say the United States is the cradle of democracy. This cannot be true. This cannot be a democracy, he said. If the United States issues arrest warrants for my 13 bodyguards in a country where I went upon invitation, I'm sorry, but I will not say that country is civilized. Erdogan's bodyguards are accused by US prosecutors of assaulting peaceful protesters outside the Turkish embassy during his visit to Washington in May. The Turkish president's scathing attack comes as diplomats from both countries are continuing efforts to resolve the mutual curbing of visas. Washington imposed visa restrictions following the arrest on terrorism charges of two local employees working at U.S. diplomatic missions in Turkey. That move saw Ankara retaliating with its own visa restrictions. The U.S. State Department described the talks Thursday as productive. Political columnist Semih Deniz of Al Monitor website says Erdogan's increasingly tough rhetoric against Washington should be viewed in a wider context of the importance of bilateral relations to both sides.
He is a master of coming out with bellicose remarks at unexpected and sensitive moments. But we must realize that, you know, Erdogan was in New York very recently and had a very chummy meeting with Donald Trump, who called him a special friend. So, you know, Turkey is aware, for all the problems it has with America too, that it has to tread cautiously.
Observers point out Erdogan's tough rhetoric is in part motivated by domestic politics. A tough anti-American stance plays well with Turkish nationalists Erdogan is courting for 2019 presidential and general elections. But US-Turkish relations could be further strained with an upcoming Iranian sanction-busting court case in the United States that involves Turkish-Iranian businessman Reza Zarrab and senior members of a Turkish state bank. Political consultant Attila Yeşilada of Global Source Partners warns the case can only add to bilateral tensions.
These upcoming Reza Zarrab case, which we consider a big conspiracy of the American deep state, so the possibility of these political shocks tapering off is almost nil.
Washington's ongoing support of a Syrian Kurdish militia fighting the Islamic State also continues to infuriate Ankara, who accuses the militia of being linked to an armed insurgency in Turkey. Dorian Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
And you're listening to The Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. When kids go back to school, they usually talk about what they did during their summer vacations. The 15 and 16-year-olds who joined Summer Rise in Montgomery County, Maryland, have some unique stories about work in fire departments, not-profits, private businesses, and many other workplaces. Faiza El-Masri tells us about one of the high schoolers who spent 3 weeks in the biology lab at a local college. Faith Lapidus narrates.
Today, we are going to be running some DNA on a gel.
Alina Pogosian is ready to start today's assignment for her Summer Rise internship at Montgomery College.
All right. So I think that should be good. So go ahead and turn off the
instructional
light.
Lab coordinator Jennifer Sengbush works closely with her.
And your last lane, the control, shows no DNA.
Alina says she's enjoyed the program and gotten a lot out of it.
A lot of the materials and machinery that we used here is not given at most high schools, which was really important for me to learn how to use these things. And I got to learn a lot. At the same time, I was able to have a lot of fun.
And the internship wasn't all inside a lab.
I had taken her downstairs to work with the snakes, and we have a resident tortoise, so she got some animal husbandry experience as well.
Alina is one of more than 400 students from every one of Montgomery County's 25 high schools who took part in the RISE program in its first year. RISE stands for Real Interesting Summer Experience. Sengbush says the program gave her a chance to work with high school students who may soon be applying to attend Montgomery College. She found them curious and eager to learn. Alina says she learned more than just lab procedures.
This experience helped me think about what my future options were for after I graduate.
And introducing high schoolers early on to different career opportunities is one of the goals of the program, says its founder, local activist Will Juwando.
We said there's 30,000 middle skill level jobs here in Montgomery County that are not filled. So how do we also expose them to that there's jobs here in the county that they could be doing in a year or two that pay well and are on career track? And so it was also an economic development tool. So not only a benefit to the students, but hopefully a benefit to the county and the region. If they stay here, they become productive citizens and there's a tax base. So hopefully to boost the local economy as well.
RISE is a public-private partnership. More than 140 businesses, government agencies, and nonprofits stepped up and offered to host the students for the paid internships. It also received partial funding from the county council. Councilman Craig Rice helped secure the money.
All the time in government, there are always so many needs and so many things that are important, whether it's our roads or our infrastructure, all the different types of programs that we provide as government. But it really is important to make sure that we're providing for our future generation. It was a fight, as it always is during budget time, but it's really something where I think that if we're going to be serious about being globally competitive, if we're going to be serious about providing a number of different options for our children, we've got to make sure that we put our money where our mouth is.
Some RISE participants and organizers hope the program will expand next year and inspire surrounding counties to offer similar, real interesting summer experiences. For writer Faiz El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week. Right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
I'm James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa. Join me every weekday mornings at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of the show through our listeners' mail segment. Just send your views to daybreakafrica@voanews.com or call us on 202-205-9942. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, Managing Editor of VOA News. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
And updating our top story at this hour, U.S. President Donald Trump will use his upcoming trip to Asia to further consolidate international pressure on North Korea to attempt to deter its pursuit of perfecting a nuclear-tipped intercontinental ballistic missile. Quote, if we fail to confront and reverse the threat from North Korea, we're going to be living in a much darker era. That, according to a senior White House official, who on Monday defended the administration's more assertive stance toward Pyongyang. Quote, the president's rhetoric and, more importantly, his actions have led to the most substantial shift in progress by the international community in confronting this threat that we've seen over past administrations, the official told White House reporters. Now, there is much speculation whether Mr. Trump, following in the footsteps of some of his predecessors, will go to the Korean demilitarized zone and peer into the north, placing him just within meters of soldiers on the other side of the most militarized border in the world. Whether Mr. Trump will go there is undecided. Security is not a concern, say officials, and they are not concerned about sending a message either way. Instead, Mr. Trump, at the invitation of South Koreans, is likely to go to Camp Humphreys. That's some 65 kilometers south of Seoul, and it's also the fastest-growing U.S. Army installation on the peninsula. The president, during his time in Beijing during the November trip, will also raise the North Korean issue with Chinese President Xi Jinping. Mr. Trump's trip will last 11 days. He departs early in November. Well, that is our newscast for you for this hour. Thanks so much for joining us. This reminder, you can read all the latest world news 24 hours a day at our website, voanews.com.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States has announced it will withdraw from UNESCO at the end of 2018. UNESCO is the Paris-based UN body whose mission is to coordinate international cooperation in education, science, culture, and communication. A well-known part of its job is to help protect the world's important cultural and natural heritage sites through the World Heritage Program. State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert said the decision to withdraw from UNESCO came after a long and deliberative process. The decision was based on a number of concerns. The United States is in arrears to UNESCO in the amount of almost $550 million. That's because, under federal legislation passed in the 1990s, the United States is required to stop sending funds to any UN agency that grants Palestinians recognition as a full member state. The fact is, such a move disregards the necessity for negotiations between the Palestinians and the Israelis that will result in a Palestinian state making a real difference in the lives of both peoples. In 2011, UNESCO made such a move, and the United States, as legally required, cut off its funding to the organization. A second concern governing the U.S. decision to withdraw is the increasing politicization, including anti-Israel bias at UNESCO. In July, for example, as the U.S. mission to the United Nations noted, UNESCO made its latest politically biased decision, designating the old city of Hebron and the Tomb of the Patriarchs as part of Palestinian territory. Such an action is an outrageous attempt to separate Israel and the Jews from their history of thousands of years. Finally, spokesperson Nauert cited the need for fundamental reform at UNESCO, as President Donald Trump has called for across the United Nations. She added, however, that the United States wants to remain engaged with UNESCO and will seek to become a non-member observer state in order to contribute U.S. views, perspectives, and expertise on some of the important issues undertaken by the organization. The decision to withdraw will also not alter U.S. policy supporting international cooperation in educational, scientific, cultural communication and information activities where there are benefits to the United States.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.